Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Good Shit. I reckon watching La La Land at midnight is not a good idea. I feel like I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Really on the wrong side of the bed. And I watched La La Land, obviously ages ago, but it just came back to me, the song came back to me, and I thought, I want to watch it again in full from beginning to end. It's a really long, over 2 hour musical. And every time I watch it, something else comes at me. Not just that, Grace and Frankie, I mean, I'm just doing a big ad for Netflix, not that it needs any more, but I finished watching the latest episodes of Grace and Frankie, and so I never watched any of the first seasons, so I started watching from the very beginning. There's like 5 seasons right now. I've watched season 5, and now I'm starting with season 1. And it's so nice to see the characters, you know, back in the day. Sometimes I think watching things backwards is as good or better than watching them forwards, in the right order, because you already kind of know where it's going, and it just that hint side just makes it so enjoyable. But actually, the reason I'm bringing that up is, you know how sometimes you look at old shows and you think, oh my goodness, that was so sexist, or oh my god, that was so homophobic, and whatever seemed kind of funny at the time and totally acceptable and innocent in hindsight can seem really awful. I had one of those moments in Grace and Frankie, which is strange because, if you've not watched it, it's about these 70-something women whose husbands are just divorcing both of them because they're actually gay and they're in a couple themselves with each other. So the themes are super, super, got with a program in terms of those things. But there was a scene that kind of made me a little bit uncomfortable. Basically, Grace is one of the women, and her daughter Brianna is trying to get her on a dating website so that she isn't so freaking depressed, right? So, Grace says, no, I don't want to go on a dating website. I don't use dating websites. You know, what a weird concept. I don't want to make a profile on the internet and everyone's going to see me. And Brianna says, you know, yeah, you're right. It's not the greatest platform to meet people, but it's not bad. She said she's met about 10 men so far, and one of them had a micropenis, but the others were normal. And I thought, the joke seems as though it's kind of referring to something mythical that isn't really real, and so it's kind of funny, but it is real. Like, obviously it is real, and I can't really see that as having a positive connotation. It doesn't have a positive connotation. She didn't really go into detail. It was just a very kind of isolated line. But it basically just said, oh my God, yeah, you know, people are fairly normal, except this guy had a microphone. And it's just like, well, this person's a real person. What is this person supposed to do? What is this person supposed to do to avoid this kind of derision? You know, yeah, you could say, well, no, there's nothing you can do about it. Just accept it. But honestly, it's like, normally when you make fun of someone, there is an implication that it is within their power to change their mind and change their behavior and do the right thing. You know, if I keep pestering someone to clean after themselves, it's because I believe they are making the wrong decision to be a slob and to be lazy. But when there is no such choice that someone can make, why would you make fun of them? Like, what is this guy with a micropenis supposed to do? There's not much he can do. Is he supposed to wear like a prosthetic fake penis and then be sued for being misleading and, you know, whatever? Is he like, what is there really to do? Really not much. And even though there are some workarounds around it, let's say, for example, surgically, maybe, it really isn't a walk in the park, you know, and to kind of hit at something that you just can't really do anything about. It's kind of mean, really. Anyway, that is so not the topic for this. The topic for this is Freud. Okay, no, why? Why would I talk about Freud? It's essentially, you know, kind of looking into the early awareness of ourselves and how gender plays into that. Because most people, you know, even now, still have this very convinced self-perception in terms of who they are that just happens to be so heavily gendered. I wonder if whatever it is that happens, you know, whether before birth or soon after birth, is really just an exercise to basically brainwash everyone into really believing something about themselves very strongly. And then it colors people's whole lives and what they understand by love and what they understand by relationship and what they understand by a good relationship. You know, this, I guess this ties in with La La Land. Thanks, La La Land. Look what you've done. I don't, you know, spoiler alert, but in La La Land, it's basically this big story about this couple who is very slow to kind of fall in love, is very skeptical, but, you know, very soon they realize that actually they are totally in love and they have a really nice relationship, but then it kind of falls apart because they need to chase their own career, and that just means they can't be together, and there's just these, you know, circumstantial difficulties, and then they kind of just let go of each other, and then they meet again years later, and one of them's already got married and has a kid and whatever, and there's just this kind of sense of, you know, as the song goes, is this just another dream that I cannot make true? And where does this dream come from? And why are we attached to it? So Freud's theory of attachment basically goes like this. Children form a emotional bond with their parent. And for, let's say, the typical historical story, this would have been their mother who gave birth to them and breastfed them and just had to take care of them. So for the purposes of this, let's say, generalized theory, the mother is the attachment for everyone, regardless of boys or girls. You know, everyone's first attachment is the mother. So because of that, the relationship dynamic in a heterosexual situation is such that the child is having a male perspective relationship with the mother because the mother is a woman. So their projection from the mother is male because the mother is married to a man and heterosexual interactions are male-female. So for boys, this makes sense because they are male themselves. And so they see their father as the third party competitor. And I think this theory actually works really well with thinking about third party situations and cheating, because in many ways that childhood experience is the first experience of disappointment and competition and hurt. So if you have your first relationship and implicitly there is a third party, you know, I guess this raises the question of, is it even possible for a child to actually have two equal attachments to two parents? And by attachment, I mean like this really strong thing. It's not just talking to someone or getting along with them or living with them. It's actually the actual, this supreme primal bond that kind of is above everything else. And so for a boy, that's just a fairly straightforward, you know, this other man who is already with my mother is older than me and I could not really compete. But as he grows up, he grows up, so he becomes more like that third party and can identify with that third party and can hope to become like them and get some woman to love them. And that's how the story goes. Now, for girls, because they aren't male in themselves, a different thing happens. And I don't really understand how this goes. I think a lot of this is really symbolic and it takes a lot of thinking to kind of wrap your head around it without it sounding just plain stupid. But the theory for girls goes such that because you already see that that's just not possible because this third party is a man and you aren't male and you're not going to grow up to be male, you kind of skip over that possibility even and just go straight to the only other option, which is, you know, you can't get a woman pregnant, but you yourself are the woman that could get pregnant. So you transmute the desire to be male and, you know, be with a woman and get her pregnant into the desire to be the one to get pregnant by a man. And so identify with your mother and have this heterosexual relationship towards men. It is a lot really to take in, but I do think there is some truth to that dynamic. And I think, you know, I was thinking about, you know, what it feels like to be pregnant and what it feels like to have kids of different ages. And I did sort of think, actually, I don't see how it is, you know, there is something very personal and individual about a relationship. So if this desire for a exclusive monogamous interaction is so strong in people, it must go back to that first attachment of being born and being taken care of as a baby. Because I think all attachment ultimately comes down to that, you know, we as adults don't really need these convoluted, dramatic relationships, do we? The weight of it and the significance and the importance of it is tied into that, you know, taking care of a baby situation, because that is dramatic and that is vulnerable. And that is why this is such a big thing. So if all of our understanding of ourselves and what love means and what a relationship means comes from this very dumbed down, disturbing, triggering sexual interaction of how we interacted with our parents when we were very young and how other people sort of created this environment where we had to compete for affection and see our sexuality as a good thing or a bad thing. I suspect for most people, probably a bad thing, because sexuality contradicts attachment. Sexuality is about doing something for yourself and using someone else to get something for yourself, whereas attachment is giving something to someone else. So if you have an attachment, being very sexual is a threat to the attachment. You know, if a mother had a baby and decided that instead of taking care of the baby, which is a really, it's a chore and it's this drudgery that takes a long time. I mean, of course it can be enjoyable, but strictly speaking, it's just a big piece of work to do that. if she was like, well, you know, I can't be asked with this, I'm just going to go have fun. you see why those energies are inherently contradictory. So that is why I think within families, sexuality is such a issue. Because there's just this inherent struggle between the safety of a defined, contained attachment and the threat of just doing some, just escaping it, leaving it, cheating. That's what cheating is. And you can see how for some people, cheating is a very sexually colored thing where you get, you know, this brings me to this song by The Killers, Mr. Brightside, where just an image is so triggering and disturbing and powerful. You just get jealous and there's no reason for it. You know, you just seeing, you know, some people are just over the top, just seeing their significant other with any odd man or any odd woman is just something they can't deal with. And anyway, you can't have male friends, you can't have female friends, you can't, you know, and there's just this, you know, there's all this energy attached to it. So when you try to reconcile these things, this is where the whole adult struggle of how you love and how you navigate these things comes down to. And this is, I find this to be very, very true for me. And I think everyone experiences that because, you know, if you think about it in the Freudian theory, it's not as if the little boy is like, oh, well, you know, yeah, this can work. He still feels like he can't work because his father's like this or like that. And even though we have no reason to doubt ourselves, you know, I'm not saying incest. This is not where this is going. but the point is even though we might have no reason to doubt ourselves and our worthiness, because of this dynamic, there's this perpetual fear of, you know, there will be someone more qualified for this relationship with the person that you're with, more qualified than you. And obviously the little boy, you know, the little cis boy, you know, because Freud is obsessed with penises, right? So the little cis boy does have his own penis, but he doesn't see it as valid because his dad is bigger and he's just gonna like step on it or whatever, right? So obviously you can imagine for me, you know, not even having that, I guess I would have skipped over the realization that, well, I'm not male and I don't have a penis, so what now? And if I had ended up identifying as female, I would have then just said, well, yeah, but that's fine because I'm just going to get pregnant and be into men or whatever. I mean, you can see how that is a bit problematic in terms of trying to explain every single possible outcome of that situation. But for me to have, let's say, already got castrated in inverted commas, and then deal with that is even a more powerful experience of that inadequacy and of that struggle. And, you know, yes, you could be the perfect man and you could still be an insecure, super jealous wanker. Like, it's not as if having a certain body is going to fix that. That's not how it works. That's the issue, is that if it feels as though, oh, if only you have this, if only you do that, then you'll feel confident. But it doesn't work like that. It's this loop of, you know, the black hole of just pushing you further and further. It's just never enough, right? And so for me to kind of fall into that context and try to feel good enough and valid enough is just even more difficult. And I'm not going to lie, part of me feels as though, well, because I cannot live up to that dynamic, which is funny, because if you think about it, you know, you think, oh, this person's having a much better relationship with this other person. And a lot of the time, that's not true. And everyone's having a shit relationship with everyone. And there isn't this, you know, this image of this is better than what I could have, isn't actually even happening. It's not even actually real. But we're just fixating on it and we just won't let it go. And so this realization does sometimes make me feel like anyone would be right and correct to dismiss me as someone they would be interested in. Because if this dynamic is so powerful and it's just something already set from childhood, and I don't qualify for it, then how can I blame anyone for just not wanting me? 'Cause they have such a good reason not to, you know, but that's probably for another time. I think I'm going to wrap this up. The last thing I want to talk about is this picture. There's this picture of a sort of sandy beach, and there's this woman. You know, you can see her from behind, and she's wearing a dress, and then there's this man in front of her, you know, a few meters away, kind of looking at her, and there's nothing sexual about that picture. There's nothing. There's just nothing sexual about it. You know, this man is just like some average guy, but of course I still fixate on that. And I think, well, he's better because he's tall enough and he's, you know, he's just better, right? And the image is a little bit blurred. So you can't even really see what's going on. And then she's kind of looking his way and you can just kind of see her from behind, and this super sexualized thing just comes to the surface with no reason to. These are just people and they just have bodies. There's no reason to attach this dynamic to it, but you just can't help it. It's just insane. And you feel like that person has something on you, and they can have that sexual dynamic, but you can't. They can have all this, but you can't. And, you know, this picture comes to life, and this guy, they're talking and flirting, and then he's just grabbing her ass, and you think somehow you can't do that, and you couldn't do that. And if you were in that picture, you would just be self-conscious and awkward, and you wouldn't even want to be in that picture. And you feel like you would just be rejected before even doing anything. And anyway, I'm just going off on a tangent with this one, but I do have to wrap it up because there is, a set, amount of time that I have on my account for these things. But I will, keep blabbering on a future episode. All right. Catch you later.